CliffCentral.com. Solo. You're never solo in the mornings with us. We're always here to help you start your day. Thursdays are good because we get a pretty good handle on what's happening both in South Africa and the world. It is what we call the burning platform, and it's brought to you by Nando's. Hey, speaking of Nando's, I got an email from them. They say, you know, there's this the supposed Nando's ad that's gone out with Azishe, all about the legalization of marijuana. Mm-hmm. An enthusiastic social media user created an ad claiming it was from Nando's. The ad went on to do the rounds on social media, but yeah, it's apparently a fake.
What absolute flattery.
Yeah.
That people want to make a joke and they think it'll only be really funny if they can associate it with the brand.
Isn't that clever?
Yeah.
So there we go. If you see these Azishe posters, they are fake Nando's ads, but Nando's say, you know what, thanks for the compliment anyway. So I just thought I'd give you that little update. All right, we've spoken to him a number of times before. You know his name. He is a regular contributor to Inter Alia, the Daily Maverick, and he's been a regular contributor to CliffCentral.com for some time too. He is none other than Richard Poplack. It is a pleasure to have him join us this morning to do the burning platform for all of us, to give us some idea of what the big stories are. Richard, good morning. How are you?
How are you, boss?
I'm very good, man. It's nice to hear from you. I haven't spoken to you in ages.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Who have you been upsetting lately?
Just the usual. I mean, you know, I've been taking a hammer to corporate South Africa over the last little while. It's too easy, though. Yeah, you know, and here they were over the course of this week. The poor banks, it turns out, have been having a hard time from the ANC, or at least they were in the last couple of years. So now I feel bad for going off to corporate South Africa.
Yeah, when you hear at the state capture hearings about how people were getting please call me's because Gupta accounts were being shut down and the banks were actually the good guys in the story, because we've always been sold the story that, you know, we know more or less that corporate South Africa is lacking in courage a lot of times when it comes to standing up to the politicians. In this case where they did, we only heard about it many years later. But I do think particularly Maria Ramos has come out of this looking very good.
Yeah, she actually has. And I mean, you know, around the world, banks are usually considered to be the bad guys. Mm-hmm. Somehow in South Africa, we've turned them into, you know, glowing citizens who have kept us from the abyss. It's, yep. You know, this country is absurd. I don't know how we keep managing it, but we keep managing it.
Somehow it works. Somehow it just squeaks through every time. All right, well, let's talk about some local politics, because that seems to be our lingua franca. Musi Maimane has informed the party's federal executive he will not be standing as a premier candidate for the Western Cape. Wouldn't that in any case have been a step down for him? Just because in the DA, the former leader was also the premier of the Western Cape doesn't mean that that is a route to greater glory. And surely if you're standing as the leader of the party, your first prize should be to get enough votes that you could actually be president, or if you're going to be realistic about things, that you should be the leader of the opposition in parliament.
Absolutely. I don't know what Musi was thinking. I don't know what any of his advisors were thinking when they made this move. I mean, one of the huge problems is that, you know, when you're in parliament, you're on TV. When you're in, you know, a provincial legislature, you're not. So he would have come out to the Western Cape and basically disappeared. If you're Helen Zille, that's a great thing. If you're the leader of the DA and what you need to be is a major force in South African national politics, what was the point of this move? I think they panicked. And I think they're panicking about the Western Cape. Musi does apparently poll well in the Western Cape. I'm here in Cape Town right now. And I think the idea was that because the party has taken such a hammering in the province over the last little while, mm-hmm. It's not as safe as it was once assumed. So I think there was a whole bunch of panicking going on. And the knee-jerk reaction was Musi put his hand up and says, I'm going to run for the Western Cape, which is his prerogative as DA leader. It would have been an enormously foolish move.
You know, it worries me and irritates me a little bit that
sometimes the DA can be very parochial. Like, sure, they've managed to get the Western Cape more or less in line. And as you've just pointed out, their polling numbers seem to be dropping in certain places because they seem a little directionless and rudderless as a party. There's internal goings-on that don't seem to be very well thought through. Their communication strategy is a disaster. And people who would ordinarily have jumped to support them are not so sure that they want to support them anymore.
No, I think there's been a huge fall off in certainly in support for the DA, but also in confidence as well. The way the party dealt with the water crisis here in Cape Town was appalling.
At least they dealt with it. It was meant to be national government's responsibility. Let's remember, at least they did something.
All the money in national
government was stolen, so there wasn't any money to do anything.
100%. But the point was how this entire situation was negotiated here in Cape Town, within a city caucus, a municipal caucus that was literally trying to kill itself.
Yeah.
Right. All of the fighting, the infighting that was happening here. And I covered that story before it broke. And it was astonishing how the party just wasn't willing to look the issue in the face.
Right.
And wasn't willing to properly look the crisis in the face. And what emerged from that was the very clear notion that this was a party at war with itself. That in the same way that the African National Congress has all these factional battles, a very similar thing was happening within the DA. Uh-huh. And that's become clearer and clearer and clearer over the course of the past several months, especially leading up to their own national conference. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is the other municipalities as well, which have been, Nelson Mandela Bay has been a disaster.
But that won through no fault of the DA. There was skullduggery and shenanigans going on between the EFF and the ANC.
100%.
And the UDM, frankly. I mean, we mustn't forgive them their transgressions.
No, don't forget the UDM in this one.
And but I just want to highlight this PE situation because it irritates me. From the point of view of the people of PE, it's an unmitigated disaster what's happened there.
It's a disaster. You're 100% correct that this was a group effort, the destruction of Nelson Mandela Bay, largely on the ANC. The problem is the optics, right? And it's this sort of steady erasure of voters' trust, which has sort of got the DA into the position it is right now, where they should be soaring, especially on the back of the State Capture Commission, the Zondo Commission. They should be soaring right now. There is no excuse for voting for the ANC. Unfortunately, the DA has scored so many own goals that they're in a tentative position.
Yeah, it almost would make some people in the DA hanker for Helen Ziller to come back. Despite all her tweets, there was at least some sense of direction and leadership, right?
Yeah, the FedEx and all of the other bodies were, for better or worse at the time, united behind her. And you could see the growth that happened when that was the case. When the party was united, the trend lines were inexorable. Mm-hmm. The party trended up. Now that the party is divided, it's trending down. That should be a lesson to everyone in the DA. You can't ignore the numbers. United, we grew. Divided, we dip. Hopefully this is a warning. This country desperately needs functional opposition parties, desperately, and we don't have them.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about some of the others when we have some more time. I want to talk about the DA for a second, and the ANC for a second, because we've gone from the DA. Dan Plato is the guy that they're saying might become mayor in Cape Town in a statement that was released on Tuesday night. The ANC said he would make a lousy choice. Well, that's really rich coming from a party that has got us to a situation where only 7% of our municipalities are even even liquid. They even have money in the bank. And they are accusing Plato of having dealings with gangsters in the Cape Flats, which is ironically precisely how the ANC ended up taking over the Western Cape some years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, look, Plato's a bit of a tough choice. But, you know, this is the other thing, Gareth, and I don't think we don't actually look this issue in the face enough and say this might actually be the problem with our politics. Mm-hmm. National, provincial, and municipal politics is all party politics. In other words, if you're a party like the DA, okay, and you're making a play to be a national party, much like the EFF is as well, you need capacity all the way down the line. Mm-hmm. So as an opposition party, you need to be able to run at a national level in parliament.
Right.
You need to be able to run a province, okay, actually govern a massive province like the Western Cape, and have the capacity to run municipalities as well. Where do these people come from? Right? It's these parties are spread so thin.
And isn't it? And
the fighting for scraps and the fighting for power is so vicious, especially at the municipal level, that they can't actually function. And I think the best thing we could do is eliminate party politics at a municipal level.
And
many countries do it.
Go to the candidate system there?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? Yeah. It's ironic that that's exactly where the important stuff happens. The real delivery happens at that level. And those
Absolutely.
Are the people who are the most incompetent, who are right down on the bottom of the party list, who no one really is that interested in. And they do the hard work. They have to be municipal managers. They have to make decisions around, you know, water, electricity, lights, rubbish removal, roads, crime, local areas, the understanding of the population, the demography, the geography. No one at that level in politics understands a damn thing. They're the most incompetent of all of our politicians.
And that's the real issue. So, you know, this is the problem with a guy like Plato coming back into city politics here in the Western Cape, is that the bench is just not deep enough, you know, and the capacity just isn't there. And it's a huge issue. You know, a party like a DA now has aspirations to run three provinces come the next elections. If they try to keep their noses clean, that might actually happen. Where's the capacity coming from? They can barely manage as it is now. It's a huge issue. And they'll tell you they've got people training, they're building people up, they're building up capacity. But it's just, it's not a viable system. We should be drawing our bureaucrats from places that are not political parties.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. from your mouth to God's ears is all I can say.
Indeed.
Let's talk about the deputy president. I can't believe we call him that, but there he is. Didi Gangster Mabuza, who's downplayed the country's...
Gangster in chief, baby.
Yeah, he's downplayed the country's slide into a technical recession, saying it's not a crisis, but merely a challenge that can be overcome. This sounds a lot like when Nomvula said, oh, if the rand drops, we'll just pick it up. These are people who are astonishingly illiterate when it comes to economics, who have absolutely no grasp of how money works and have clearly been parasites on the system for such a long time that they've forgotten that there are hardworking people that actually make the wheels turn. A guy like this saying something like that is so extraordinarily callous when it comes to the lives of ordinary working people that it beggars belief.
It's unbelievable. I mean, a recession is a state of mind, Gareth. You know, you just gotta think your way out of it, right? Just be positive. And an entire economy of a middle income country will pick itself up.
If it was thinking, you know? If it was thinking, it would be some kind of it would be progress of a kind. It's demagoguery that drives me crazy. It's rhetoric. It's selling this old line when you've run out of ideas, when you're intellectually bankrupt. Drives me crazy.
Yeah, look, I mean, this self-made technical recession that we're in, and it is self-made. We are literally one of the only countries in the world that didn't make hay while the sun was shining over the course of the past 10 years as the global economy picked it. And you know what was astonishing is that even a year ago, you were hearing various finance ministers of various people in the Treasury saying, you know what, the global headwinds are keeping us back. It's like, guys, the rest of the world is growing at not at a record pace, but pretty hectically. We're shrinking. Isn't there some kind of disconnect there?
Well, I'm going to throw the word...
And there was a disconnect.
I'm going to throw the word ESCOM. ESCOM. I'm going to say ESCOM again. That's our early warning system. That's the canary in the coal mine. ESCOM over 300 billion rand.
Yeah, it's the nuclear bomb in the middle of this economy. And it is literally, the fuse is burning. I don't know if nuclear bombs have burning fuses, but it's a metaphor we'll run with in this case. It's insane. It's an existential problem for this country.
Right.
Our power to utility. To hear Didi Mabuza of all people, give us empty boosterism to walk us through the recession we're in, which is killing people, Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
It's killing people. I mean, you know what it's like out there right now.
It is grim. If you see businesses closing down, you can see people being laid off. And the stark, ugly reality of all of this is that Cyril can say to private enterprise, with his tongue firmly lodged in his cheek, I would assume, don't fire people. It's really important that we hold on to people. He doesn't seem to understand himself. And Cyril is the guy who ran on the idea of being a businessman. It's largely why he got support from poor people in South Africa, because they heard in some of the messaging that this was a guy who could create jobs. You know, we got 9.2 million unemployed people wandering around in South Africa with nothing to do all day, no means of making themselves productive citizens and bringing home some bacon. Cyril says, don't fire people. Keep the bloated civil service at the level it is. And private enterprise, by the way, showing a complete lack of understanding for how business works. Cyril betrays the fact that he really was just, he'd found a way to sort out his non-presence in a post-Mandela government under Thabo Mbeki by going out there and becoming just a BEE stooge. He doesn't know that businesses can't keep people on the payroll if they're not making money.
Or maybe he does. I have no idea. But the point is that rhetoric just isn't helpful, nor is it realistic. So we're in a situation where, the populist rhetoric coming out of the mouths of the ANC leadership right now is so empty and so dangerous that it's going to slam this country into a wall. And you're right. A lot of the people who surround Cyril are big, powerful businessmen.
Yeah.
Right? That's where he gets – that's the bubble that he lives in. Kind of the only thing we can hope for Cyril is that he does renegotiate that bridge between government and business, so that we start becoming a functional operating country, right? That really is the only thing that Cyril offers. And to hear him sort of mouth off on these sort of bizarre platitudes, don't fire people, hang on. I mean, what is that?
It's pie in the sky.
We over-legislate how business functions in this country anyway.
Yeah.
During a recession, things are just going to go south. That's how it works.
All right, let's talk about Enoch Godongwana, who we actually thought was... We thought for a long time, and there are people who still... you talk about Cyril and these powerful businessmen around him. They believe Enoch is one of the good guys. He is available... How nice of him to make himself available to appear before the State Capture Commission to clarify his role in summoning banking executives to Luthuli House. We touched on this at the beginning of the discussion. This was after Johan Berger told the State Capture Inquiry of how he received a please call me, not even a message or a missed call or a WhatsApp, a please call me, like it's the year 1999. In 2016 from Enoch Godongwana about the decision to cancel Gupta family bank accounts. Now, if I understand this right, and you can clear up where I might miss some important and salient points here, Richard. If people like Gwede and Enoch are starting to be named in the state capture machine, this is surely the reason that Jacob Zuma keeps laughing when he's interviewed, because he knows as well as anybody that every one of them have got their hands in the till, including the supposed good guys like Enoch Godongwana, right?
100%. This is so systemic, the rot. The sort of intention to keep the ANC united under Jacob Zuma resulted in people like Enoch and Gwede doing absolutely anything to keep the machine ticking on. And that included stumping for the Guptas, because that's exactly what happened. But, I mean, this notion that Gwede is one of the good guys, I'm not entirely sure where that came from. I suppose it's just sort of by comparison to everybody else. But, you know, Gwede is a, he's definitely in the swamp. And I think a lot more is going to emerge about his involvement in some very, very nefarious activities going forward. Keep in mind, he was Secretary General of the ANC at the time when this was basically a gangster state.
Yep.
Right? So what do you – I mean, there's literally nothing I can imagine that Gwede hasn't done or didn't do in order to keep the ANC machine moving, because that really did mean just keeping the money funding through the patronage system.
Right.
That's what he did. And that's exactly what Ace Magashule is doing quite badly right now.
Well, while we're talking about people who have been participants in state capture, I see one person in particular is trying to distance themselves as much as they can from it, clothing themselves anew in virgin white, as if they were completely outside of the system looking in. And he's trying to say, I'm a massive supporter of Cyril, and Cyril is our savior, despite being the head of the South African Communist Party, which would always be... you would think, siding on the other side to capital. Bladen Zimande has called on the ANC to identify people plotting to oust Cyril. He says the plot that is being discussed in dark corners by some of the ANC leaders is not only directed at President Ramaphosa, but at the poor as well. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think anyone in the ANC cares about the poor. But I will certainly say that there is that there are huge factional battles within the ANC. Blade's just a genius to point that out. How defined this plot is, how much of the palace coup has sort of gained coherency, who its leaders are, I think that's sort of not quite established yet. But, you know, you can't have the Secretary General lying about a meeting with the former president of the party and the former president of the country in some shady hotel room in Durban. That can't happen, right? And yet it is happening. So there's definitely some kind of palace intrigue afoot. But there was no question that the factional battles in the ANC had quelled. It's just interesting to see how vicious and how pointed they are. Ace Magashule will not survive as Secretary General of the ANC under a Cyril Ramaphosa presidency. He might very well survive under a Didi Mabuza presidency.
Well, the very words Didi Mabuza presidency send shivers down the spine of just about every thinking person in the world.
Absolutely. But, you know, keep in mind, he's deputy president.
I know.
I mean, the next step is not down, it's up. So that's, you know, that's how the party works, and that's how this country works. So this is not good, Gareth.
You're telling me. All right, so Richard, what do we have to read from you or anyone else this week that you think is instructive if people want more?
Go to Daily Maverick. Always go to Daily Maverick. My colleagues are doing great work. I'm working on a documentary about Bell Pottinger right now, believe it or not. So I'm writing a little bit less than I am normally, but coming up, I think top of next week, I'll do a nice little summary of the days of Zondo. But just hit Daily Maverick. We're keeping folks updated and very good work up there.
You can't just drop in that you're doing this documentary on Bell Pottinger. Have you been able to find enough people to go on the record who used to either work there or people who dealt with them? I mean, is it hard to dig?
You know, I'll drop the bombshell here. I've spent 5 days, 5 long days interviewing Lord Timothy Bell.
Yes.
He spoke very, very candidly on camera. There's going to be a lot more scoops sort of coming through with the film going forward. So yeah, it's absolutely. People have been speaking to us. The access we've gotten bizarrely has been incredible.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's been a very interesting process, and I can't wait to see what you come up with there. Thank you so much for speaking to us this morning. Always nice to talk to you, Richard. Thank you.
Likewise, it was a pleasure, Gareth. Thank you.
There we go. Wow, huh? How's that, Sia? Richard Poplack and The Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's.
Whoa, that documentary is going to be something.
Dropping bombshells.
Five whole days where he speaks candidly. The world wants to know.
It's going to be something very, very saucy and all of that. I still think we haven't even scratched the surface on this Bell Pottinger thing. You know, we kind of moved on very quickly once we discovered there was a plot against the people of South Africa.
Mm.
And that Bell Pottinger was drafted in as PR and smokescreen and spin experts to try to distract us from our thieving politicians and the Guptas and turn us on each other. It is an act of no less than treason what occurred there. And no one has been brought to book.
It's about time treason actually meant something again. Like you're working against the countries against the country.
Are you saying make treason great again?
Make treason great again, Gareth. Make treason punishable again. Make treason treason again. Just think like if I plus against Sia today.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, what a dick. Mm. A horrible thing to do. And I'd be accountable to that. Imagine you plus against a country. That's 55 million people. An entire country. That's bad.
We can't just disregard that. Yeah.
Just Playing LT says, Richard should be a permanent replacement for Justice Malala. The guy is good. Yeah, we like having Richard. He's
what I've always said.
He's a busy guy. He's good. Really, Ben.
From day one, Gareth, yeah.
Really? Okay. He's a busy guy. He's got a lot going on, but we will try to get him on regularly. And by the way, we've been talking to Justice. He has been in and out. He will make a triumphant return to the Burning Platform at some point. You know he lives in Los Angeles now. And we'll find out what he thinks of what's going on in America and locally, because he's keeping an eye on things. In the meantime, though, here is someone who's just called in to speak to Ben. Yes, go ahead, please.
You don't need to be like that.
I want to what I want to! Fuck you!
What did I do to you?
Fuck all the fuck off!
Ma'am.
Hey, so wreck your back now!
Which burning platform does she do?
Whoa. We're going to have her on the burning platform next week, isn't it?
Yeah, see, I pinned my hopes and thoughts into Richard's mask, and that woman phones in.
Yeah, that woman apparently trashed a convenience store. If you missed yesterday's show,
for what reason?
I don't know. She's got cross.
She has issues. Life,
yeah? I love it. I played life. It for Celeste here in the office. So Celeste looks at me and she goes, "Wow, that is an angry woman.
Very angry woman." Woman with issues, a woman with a lot to say.
Yes, yes.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Yeah, if you are that cross, you need to calm down. Someone needs to sit you down and say to you, hey, relax.
And you've lost it at that point.
You're going to die of stress, woman.
That is when people say they see red. She's lost it. There's no reasoning with her. There's no talking to her.
Say
her voice goes to a certain extent as high as like a dog whistle.
Yeah, it does. That's pretty good impersonation, Sia. That's very good. I like it. Okay, when we come back, we'll get into some news, some of the things that are going on, talk to you. You know how to get hold of us. 0861-555-189. I know a lot of people are saying there's a problem with the streaming this morning, so I've let our technical guys know. I hate technical problems. 0797482090 if you want to message us. Do it. It's easier to do. Anyone can do it. Even an idiot like me.
Lately, I've been thinking, I want you to be happier. I want you to be happier. When the morning comes and we see what we've become. In the cold light of day, we're a flame in the wind, not the fire that we begun.
Nice. Now that is a Happy Thursday song. It's even called Happier. It's by Marshmello featuring Bastille. It is 7:30. What?
I was going to guess Bastille.
Oh, really?
Are you being facetious or
no?
Genuine?
No.
Okay.
Why would I not know that?
Ben would be aware of this. He was a DJ once, Sia. Don't you know anything?
DJ Ben K?
Yeah.
Damn it. If you were a DJ now, I would be your number one hype man. I'd be right there. Just those good old days.
Hype man. It would be fun. See, maybe I should just go play one set.
Like a reunion tour?
Nah, just one.
Okay.
A one-off, 15 minutes.
One night only. No, I'll give 2 hours. I was a professional.
Okay, that's good.
Your fans generous would like to hear that, just for the last time.
Let's hook it up.
CliffCentral.com.
75,000 rand.
Is just after 7:30.
75,000 rand for a 2 hour set for DJ Ben K.
Yeah, and 5 for my hype man.
5 is still not enough.
What do you do? A hype man needs more than 5?
Your?
There are DJs, actual DJs, are like charging 2.
I need like 15 grand. You know, I'll be whooping. Really? I'll be chanting his name. So, I also need to clear my throat.
A couple of emails. We'll get to those just now. And you know how to get hold of us. 0861-555-189. If you want to message us, 0797482090.
There was a boy in England land. He was banned from school photos. And
what did he do?
He was autistic, Gareth.
Oh. So what did he do in the school photos that got him banned?
Well,
that sounds horrible. That sounds mean.
See, now that's the clickbait headline that these stories are kind of thrust into our faces.
Yes.
But the whole thing was that because of his autism, he was seen as quite antisocial. He battled to work with groups.
Yes.
And at schools, even though he was sent to a different school, of course, but he could never really work with groups, and he wasn't allowed to be in the school play. You know, because he was quite an unruly element towards this. Guess what solved this? Guess what made him less anxious? And guess what made him more kind of, or better behaved?
Tell us.
Modeling.
What?
Modeling, Gareth. Yes, you guessed it. He, 11-year-old boy, mm-hmm. Alfie Eldridge, mm-hmm. he signed up to a model agency called Zebedee Management Model Agency.
Zebedee Model, of course, they're a huge modeling agency. Everyone knows them, Zebedee.
Zebedee.
Zebedee Management.
That sounds fly by night.
That's the character from Isidingo.
Zebedee Management is a model agency for children with disabilities.
Yeah.
And this is what the website's got to say. Our models are beautiful. No ifs, no buts, no excuses. Talents and beauty don't care how many legs you have or what condition you are born with. As a specialist modeling agency, we're passionate about redefining the perception of beauty, disability, and diversity. And with the right opportunities and support, we believe amazing things can happen to amazing people.
Huh.
But now Alfie, who, let's be honest, on the outset of things, is a bit of a little shit.
Yes.
Forget any condition or whatever. He was an unruly element in the school.
Yes.
He said he likes being treated like a celebrity. And on the model shoots, on these things he's at, he's well behaved, he's calm. And his parents say that the behavior is now overflowing to other areas of life. And he's an absolute delight.
I have always believed, rightly or wrongly, that if you give some... There's a certain kind of person who just needs attention.
That's all it is.
They didn't get enough when they were little. People ignored them. People said, get out of the room, shut up, don't be stupid, you're a moron, get out of here.
So,
and then they needed it desperately, and then they look for it in their adult life or even in their latter childhood, their teenage years. They're desperate for that attention. If you just give them a little bit of it, they'll do anything for you. Anything. They'll go to the shops for you. They'll clean your car for you. Do anything if you just give him a bit of attention.
So Alfie's appeared in campaigns for River Island, H&M, Land Rover.
He's a legit model.
And despite the fact he can't turn left, he does aspire to one day build a school for kids who can learn and read better.
Sounds like Zoolander.
He can't turn left.
No. Zoolander couldn't turn left either. He was autistic. You didn't know that?
I have so many questions. I have so many questions.
But like the cool thing is he goes to school now. He tells his friends about the model shoots, all that kind of stuff. So he's finding a way to integrate better. And it's all because they found something that appeals to him.
He's not a problem child anymore.
And that's just said by Ben today.
Thank you, Ben. Do you remember that movie Problem Child?
No.
There was a kid, this horrible little kid. No. It was a movie in the 90s, I think.
I just thought my mother was always referring to my brother when that movie came out.
Problem child.
Yeah, he was. He is.
You have two brothers.
Yeah, one's a problem child.
You weren't the problem child?
I was delightful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sia, who's the problem child in your house?
Actually,
what
there
a
is,
thing
there
to
is,
call,
no, there
what
is
a thing
one.
To call your child a problem child.
No, one of my sisters, and she, I think, gladly admitted at this point. Yeah, she's the one who would. She started working at a bar at 15 just so that she could drink often. She would unscrew the bars on our window and sneak out of the house. Yeah, she...
Problem child.
She's a problem child. She once put one of my Christmas toys into the microwave.
Yeah.
Because I was too excited. She once dabbled or tried to dabble in, like, hexing and witchcraft just to put a hex on my mother once because she was annoyed at her. Yeah, she's a problem. She's a problem child.
Well, there was a movie.
She's a mess, yeah.
Really shitty little kid who just caused trouble everywhere he went. Just antisocial and broke things and put the adults in danger.
Like, how can you be that person, honestly?
Yeah, a lot of families have their problem child.
Yeah, just admit it.
So how are you going to see the local black gay porn we now make? At Top Kasi has been blocked by you guys on WhatsApp. No. No one's blocked. I've just read your message. So how could you be blocked?
Yeah.
But at the same time...
You remember Kasi Tops are the guys who are doing
black
gay porn. Yeah.
And while you were away, they sent about 17 giant dick pics to the screen in various stages of professional facilitation.
Sure.
Who was the guest we had that day?
Shame, and there was someone sitting in the studio and they had to be privy to watching all these dick pics on the screen.
All that cock just in their face.
Yeah, but you must always just scroll down when they're guests.
I did, and then they got bigger as I scrolled.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. I hope you apologize to the guest.
I had to. Oh, yeah. I had to then show my penis just to balance it out. God. It wasn't quite as big, but it was just...
Okay.
Mr. Shemangle says, Ben, your story about Elfie. His parents need to be murked for allowing Elfie to become such a menace.
He was kind of born with that. You don't quite.
Yeah. But you've started a trend of punish the parents if the child's a menace.
But he's not a menace anymore. At least the parents send him off to be a model at Zebedee Management.
Zebedee.
Jennifer says, my mom doesn't even say problem child. She just calls you a miserable shit.
You're?
Well, Jennifer, tough in your house. All right, what else is going on?
Well, today's the day for Colin Rex, the Parktown Boys High School water polo coach.
Yeah.
He was found guilty, as we know, of 114 counts of sexual assault and 12 counts of common assault. And today he's looking at being sentenced at the Palm Ridge Magistrates Court.
Oh, so they found him guilty, huh?
Yeah.
Sure.
Several witnesses throughout the process of the trial stepped up and spoke about the water polo coach, mentioning things like he would often wrestle the pupils, choke them, or fondle their genitals. Even witnesses as young as 17 years old were able to speak out and up in court. This particular witness once also told the court that the accused had dry humped him and touched his genitals, and also added that he also had been choked by him.
You know, what disturbs me about this story, and there's a lot that's disturbing about it, but this is not an old, creepy man. Like, you know, there's that coach Sandusky in America who also...
Matt Sandusky.
What was his name? It was Matt or Jeff or I can't remember. Anyway, he was also accused of... interfering with these boys and on the wrestling team, I think it was. And wasn't there that movie they made up about?
Yeah, where Steve Carell was.
That's it.
Then, like...
There was that guy, but they were creepy. Older men, right? Yeah. This guy's in his early 20s.
He's 20.
He's like a young guy.
He was arrested initially at 22.
Has he testified or given his account of things at all? Or has he just pulled a Henry from Badar and sat there with a vacant look?
I'm not sure about that. I haven't, because I know it seems quite arbitrary. But the other day, I was interested to hear his side. So well, as YouTubing, but also, like, I haven't heard anything from him.
But has anyone interviewed or spoken to his uncle or his dad? Because what if this guy's uncle's Bob Hewitt? And this has kind of been like forgotten.
You mean, where did the cycle start?
Yeah, where did the cycle start with this guy? Suddenly go, well, the Springboks are having a tough year, I'm going to go molest children. You know, I don't think that was the sort of natural jump. There must be something in this guy's home life that would suggest this, which would then maybe give more clarity or closure to the whole thing. I mean, sure, this guy's going to, his life's over.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't justify what
mustn't happen
did.
Exactly. This mustn't happen again. And maybe there's ways of curbing this kind of stuff.
It's actually interesting. I didn't know this up until a couple of days ago, that he was initially arrested in November of 2016 because he was caught out through CCTV footage. So,
oh, really?
Security at the school were looking over footage, and he was spotted fondling one of the people's genitals.
Oy, oy, oy.
On camera. And that's when people were like, hold up. What's going on here?
Parktown Boys is good school, good reputation. You send your kid there, you think they're safe, you know?
Mm.
I mean, I do feel that Ben makes a good point here. Like, we've got to find out why he is doing this too. There's something that happens to people who do this to kids. There's something that happens to them when they're kids. And it's almost like they perpetuate the cycle.
Mm.
And again, that's a gross generalization, but it's a fairly accurate one in most of the stories that you'll read about these, you know, people who predate upon children. Like it's something that happened to them when they were in their formative years that made them like that. And I hope we can, somewhere in all of this amazing technological and medical and psychological advancement that we're starting to integrate into the human experience, the vast amount of data that we're able to capture about the way people behave and why they do things, that somewhere in all of that we manage to crack the code of how and why people would do this to children. And again, in this case, it's weird because he's young. He's a young dude. He's not some old man who's, you know, getting back at a youth that he didn't have, or, you know, the women didn't like him, or all the complications that come out of maybe 20, 30 years of psychological issues. Mm-hmm. This is a young guy. He himself only just finished school recently. You got to ask yourself why. Very strange. So he's going to jail.
Well, let's find out with sentencing today seem like a deeper... Look, I'm far from being a therapist or anything here, but it seems like a deeper behavioral something that's very off with him.
And he was actually... He was at Parktown Boys as a pupil as well. So he was there before as, you know, one of the kids at the school.
Because if you do it to one kid... 4 kids, 7 kids, perhaps over a space of 2 years, you can say, you know, maybe he was horny on one particular day. That doesn't excuse or condone what he's done. But if you've done it to so many kids consistently and continuously, something's off there. There's something wrong with him.
Yeah, what are the other sort of water polo coaches at that school been like? Has there been an older version of him, which was never found out?
Yeah.
Because if we just throw this guy in jail and go, ha, that'll teach him. It's like, you haven't learned the symptoms towards these things.
All right. What else is going on?
Well,
a scary story.
To a completely different story to lighten the mood, Gareth.
Thank you, because it's quite enough abuse for one day.
It's a lot. Yeah. You can now stay at a cottage in France that's made completely of chocolate.
Huh.
1.5.
Guys, you know, this world that we live in.
1.5 really, okay. Tons of chocolate.
That doesn't sound good for
you. Actually, no, wait. This is a terrible story to kind of segue to, because why would you build a house out of chocolate unless you're
trying to attract children, yeah.
Well, let's keep it above board here.
No.
Maybe if the Belgians made this, then we have a red flag. But no, it was made by a French man.
Oh, then it's going to be fine.
So yeah.
Do you live in the chocolate house?
For all of... Sure, it's cheap as
chips.
And
does a witch keep... feeling your finger to see if you're fat enough to eat?
No. What the Hansel and Gretel is going on here?
Yeah.
€50 a night. Cheapest chips. You can stay at L'Orangerie.
One more time.
I mean, there's...
L'Orangerie.
Ephemerie.
Oh, I love it when you talk so foreign.
In the gardens of the Cite de la Semaque. Why does everything have a cuppy on it?
French is not your best language.
It's like all these phrases.
Your is better.
It's like all these phrases are being attacked by mosquitoes. It's just debris everywhere on these words. Accent debris. Anyway, France, you 50 euros a night. You can stay in this completely chocolate cottage.
Okay, but you can't obviously sleep in a chocolate bed because it'll melt. So something's in the house.
The furniture's furniture. Okay. So you're not going to sleep in a chocolate bed. Like, there's no chocolate toilet. Well, there's no toilet, actually.
That would be a disaster.
Big disaster.
A chocolate toilet.
There is no toilet, actually, which is fine. You go to, like, a different outhouse. But everything's chocolate. 1.5 tons of chocolate was put together to make this happen.
Who sat with enough money and enough time on their hands to go, do you know what the world needs?
Yeah, but
I'd love stories like this. Jean-Luc Duclazier. What a guy. Like... He made a chocolate house. Yeah, this is what I love about this world. Rather than just, I don't know, being a troll on Twitter or like just being a water polo coach,
he's actually gone
and added value. He's
right.
Like, there's so many houses, but how many of them are chocolate?
I like this story too, but I'm concerned if there's a heat wave suddenly or temperatures go up a little bit, the whole house melts down, and you've paid your deposit, you've got accommodation, you know.
Well, Gareth, obviously treat the chocolate, so don't just. You're going around licking the walls, but they've used chocolate as an element for building.
All right.
And obviously they're supporting walls and stuff like that.
Those people who are excited about chocolate, this is like a dream come true.
You could stay in an actual chocolate house. We've seen those mad Scandinavians have ice houses and basically just drink vodka all the time. But here it is.
All right.
50 euros a night.
The other day, Nolo said to us that she has a strange addiction.
Oh, yes, with the
she eats sponge. She eats that foam out of sofas and beds and that kind of thing. She stopped a short while ago. When did you actually stop? Because I think this is very strange behavior, but it's something that she admitted the other day, so we're not going to judge her. Well, not that much.
Oh, whoa.
Or to her face.
When did you stop?
I stopped towards the end of last year.
Yeah, Spongile, you're going to judge her.
She judges my dancing, so I'm not surprised.
Very much so, she said. All right, well, I found someone sent this to me. My Strange Addiction is an actual TV show, and they found people. And listen to this.
My name's Adele. I'm 30 years old. I'm from Bradenton, Florida. And my addiction is eating couch cushions.
Oh. There we go. She's pulling the foam out of the couch.
Oh, listen. My God.
My earliest memory of eating cushion, I was about 10 years old, and my cousin, we were in his room, and he's like, try this.
She's eaten over 200 pounds of couch cushion in her lifetime. She's eaten 7 couches
and
2
chairs.
On a daily
basis, I probably eat about 8.5 by 11 piece of cushion. I just take little bite-sized pieces and snack on it all day.
That's what you did.
Sometimes I'll just go on like a binge where I'll just keep going for like 20, 25 minutes straight of just eating cushion. Ooh, I love couch cushion. The way it sits in my mouth, it's soft and it's a good taste. The darker cushion, the yellow cushion that tastes better.
Oh,
it just has
one.
That's
a
what
stronger
Nola said,
that's
yeah.
the one.
That's
yeah.
what Nola
oh,
said.
The yellow one's the
yeah,
one.
Yeah. Shit.
Is your mouth watering right now?
It kind of is, actually. This is so wrong. I mean, why are you guys doing this to me?
Spogile, are you still judging over there?
What the hell?
What the hell? Are you feeling unsafe sitting in a room with someone who does this?
Yeah, I probably won't have a chair at some point.
She said she won't have a chair.
Guys, I have a confession
yes.
on that note.
Uh-oh, another one.
Girl, we are just still
no,
dealing
no, no,
with...
No, it's still on that sponge note.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can mention where I was because they found out anyways. So, at some point, I was based at Isidingo, right?
Yes.
And, it was my first week, I think. And there were these chairs, you know, these office chairs in the storeroom. They were damaged. No one was using them. They were broken.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got a hold of a knife and I just started cutting through. And, yes, it was so good.
You sicko.
But I don't know how they found out.
They caught you.
I think so. Someone might have uncovered my secret, and they saw this chair that had been eaten, and they put two and two together. So they were like, ah, this one, it's you.
What did they do? Were you fired because of it?
They didn't do anything. They were just so curious. They were like, what's this about? And I told them. They were like, oh, shit, Nolo, you're so weird. And that was it.
And they didn't follow it up. They didn't, like, give you a warning or anything serious.
Because, I mean, the chairs were going to be thrown away anyway.
Ugh, so. Can you imagine all those horrible asses that sat on those chairs during
those
all those years?
Those are the best-tasting ones. That's where the flavor comes from. A clean fart. No, you cannot enjoy a clean fart.
You know, a lot of people sit in chairs and fart and
that's the best.
Oh my god.
All those
woman.
Flavors trapped in and those smells.
Flavors.
So yum.
Jesus, that's
you know what, Nola, I don't get freaked out, but that was the line on this show for me.
I wish
I've heard a lot of things in my life, but fart flavors and cushions, that is pretty much
wish
hang
you were
on. Spongile and Celeste, you guys Ooh. Work with Nola. Come to the microphone. I wanna hear this. I wanna hear your thoughts on this.
That's
Sia
so
and Ben and I speak to her every day. We have
passed the point of no return.
What, Sibs, please, what do you think of this?
I'm definitely not inviting her to my house.
Mm-mm.
But I stopped.
That is it.
No,
you're not
I appreciate
safe.
The admitting of this.
This was disgusting.
But the flavors.
Like,
no, I don't appreciate
Celeste,
it.
Celeste can't move. Celeste's sitting outside. She can't move.
No. Shame. Celeste traumatized.
Like,
Celeste
I understand
also wearing a yellow
child
shirt.
Eating these things. They don't know any better.
But I was a child when I started. I was four.
Yeah,
girl. You never stopped.
I did.
What?
Last year. I just said I stopped.
Last year doesn't mean anything. Like
you can still relapse.
You were like what? 24? Jesus. I feel sorry for your boyfriend. He like has to kiss that.
Oh,
so sad.
I work with very judgmental people. This cannot be my life. I just confessed I was being... I was vulnerable. I was...
Did Spongile just say go and get help?
She really needs that. And I'm not hugging her.
Guys, I've been clean for almost six months.
Been clean. Okay. Someone call...
I'm Nolo and I'm an addict.
Sponge addict.
Nasty.
I tell you what, just when you think you've heard it all,
This is a genuine psychological disorder.
Really?
I believe so, yeah.
It's called PICA, P-I-C-A.
Yeah?
And it is characterized, this is according to Wikipedia, by an appetite for substances that are largely non-nutritious. So some
so
people...
Like fast food, white bread, cushions...
Hey, Mr. Doctor, please. Some people love eating hair, supposedly.
Yeah.
Some
that's
people
a proximity
eat
thing as well.
Paper. I actually do know someone who used to just leave some paper on their tongue. Drywall or paint. Some people
Ooh,
love to
yes,
eat.
Yes.
Nola, what do you mean, yes?
No, I mean, you know.
Is there something else you want to confess?
What else are you eating?
Oh, God, guys. So, you know when a house has been, you know, freshly plastered and there's that fresh smell of cement? You just want
to... Her mouth is watering. No, girl. This is not normal.
You just want to scratch the wall. Celeste just gave me biscuits.
No.
You just want to scratch the walls and just dig in. It smells so good. But I've never really done that.
And then I guess for, this is more general, I'm sure a bunch of us have heard of this, of people eating soil. And
yeah.
Eaten soil.
You've also eaten soil?
That's normal, I think.
Well, for a child, maybe.
Normal's quite a relative phrase at this point of the conversation.
Simon Gillia
is horrified.
It's very creamy and yeah.
Alrighty then. Alrighty. PICA is most commonly seen in pregnant women. Those are the ones who, for example, gravitate to soil. They say small children and those with developmental disabilities, such as autism.
Like old Elfie that we heard about earlier.
With Zibidi. Yeah.
Zibidi management. Yeah.
Zibidi management. That's it. You learn something new every single day. I see. Okay.
Guys, no, but we had already established that I'm not okay.
always say the first step to getting over an issue is admitting it. So we're glad you've admitted that.
I have welcomed your admission, and I have not been judgy. I just think it's very funny. But I don't think you're a nutcase. Of course, Spogile will be asking to be working in a different part of the building to you. But you know what? She's allowed to be judgy. Not everybody has to behave a certain way. And you can always report to HR, which ironically, I think at this point, HR is Sia. Aren't you HR?
I will gladly write up that violation.
Very good.
I need to set up a case against her.
Against Nolo or against Spogile?
I feel violated.
Wait.
I feel like she'll be sniffing my chair now.
What?
Never mind. Never you mind. Anyway, that's it.
All right. That's also, yeah, that's it for us. We've got.
That's it.
Yeah. Enough. It's insanity. Professor David Block, we've spoken to him a couple of times, and in 2017, we got to talk to him about his show Looking Up, which was one of our first shows here on CliffCentral.com. One of the more fascinating individuals that you will ever meet. The prof has shared stories with us ranging from paging through the secret archives of the Vatican to the brilliance of thermonuclear fusion and what happens on the event horizon of a black hole. Uh-huh.
Ooh.
Not a boring man by any stretch of the imagination. You can listen to that. We're going to replay it for you after 8 o'clock this morning. Thanks for being part of the show this morning, and we will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Here's what you need to know. The Eastern Cape High Court is today deciding if Athol Trollope's removal was legal or not. The judges are more concerned about what actually happened, though, before they can make a ruling, or who the actual new mayor is and where he came from, because nobody really knows. Stormy Daniels is creeping the world out by telling everyone what Donald Trump's penis looks like. Scores of people around the world have been admitted to hospital with bouts of violent vomiting. Initially, doctors thought it was Ebola, but it turns out it was just Stormy's words that brought that on. And finally, Cristiano Ronaldo has hit back at his critics for being sent off in his first Champions League match for Juventus. He said he wanted to see if his new team can play by themselves without him. And after winning 2-0, he now knows they can, so he will stay on the field in future. Thank you, Cristiano. All right, everybody. CliffCentral.com.